This is Chapter 9, Part 3 of The War on Waste Paradox by Len Bertain, read by Len Bertain. Let me go over this quickly. This is about world record reports. As a quick aside, the reason that we got into this measurement some form years ago, I was working with a client and I gave the workers a very difficult goal. It was a reach. They argued that the goal was impossible, but I began measurement anyway. As the measurement unfolded, the workers made phenomenal improvement in their performance, and as they got closer and closer to their goal, they started to coast. They saw that they could hit the goal and then stop pressing to improve. But I had noticed something else about American workers. They really love to break records. They love to compete. So we decided to make a game of it by setting up the world record reporting process. Here's how it works. The first day you start, you record the performance of that day's output or whatever is being measured. You record that number and report it as 100% of the goal. That performance is now the world record. Every day's output is compared to that number, and the performance is noted. Whenever the previous record is exceeded, the performance is shown to be above 100%, and the record has been broken. The reporting of data is very simply the ratio of today's performance to the world record. In the case of sales, you want sales volume to go up. So you want to see reported sales reflect that goal. However, in the case of setup, you want it to go down. So performance improvement is a small number. Again, the numbers are reported to reflect that goal. Consider the following chart. This chart will be posted on our website in Len Bertain's book, Figures. It shows 30 days performance. The world record was broken 12 times during the month. The performance of daily output went from a world record of 134 to a world record of 296 on the 20th day. The key to this is that the world record keeps going up and everyone is challenged to improve performance. This form of measurement is very important in continuous improvement environments because it clearly shows how often performance improves. We also think that posting the world record reports where they're visible for all is another good idea. So Mr. Grimes will be able to walk out to a particular work area and look at the world record report and know immediately if there is improvement. When he looks at the chart and sees no improvement in a month, he can ask, what can he do to help? And that, my friends, is what measure is about. But it's also what management is about when Mr. Grimes asks to help. We have been having ongoing discussions about measurement as we go along here. Believe me, this is not the last you'll hear of this. But we need to make sure that all measures of work are done on a timely basis. Does everybody understand this? Bonnie raised her hand. Dr. Elby, how could you look differently at the work we do in sales? It's always going to be the same. We talk to customers on the phone. We visit customers at their facilities. We take orders and we process them. How does our job change? Dr. Elby looked at Bonnie and smiled. Then he looked at the class and asked, does anyone have any ideas about how Bonnie's job might change when we put measurements in? You could tell immediately that Roland was visibly upset by what Bonnie had said. At that point, Tony said, matter of fact, Bonnie, we showed earlier in the class how we can improve your process, order process, with the new form. I also think that you could give us more of the information that you get from customers about new products they might need or new features they want. I think we could all help you get new customers. We've never been involved with any of your customers, and yet I think they would be very impressed with what we're doing here right now. I'm pretty excited about the project that we're working on, and I think your customers would also be impressed and would like to do business with a company where everyone's involved. You know what, Bonnie? I think we would start appreciating your people in sales a lot more if you wouldn't isolate yourselves in your offices. It looked like Dr. Elby was absolutely amazed. Tony was very articulate. He was also very positive. Dr. Elby began, "Tony, that was wonderful. Does anyone have anything else to add?" There was silence. Everyone was stunned. Bonnie was clearly pleased by Tony's answer. I couldn't detect it, but I got the distinct feeling that Tony's response was not all that spontaneous. I thought that he and Bonnie were conspirators in something, because I never really saw them together at work. But then it clicked. They went to the same church. That was the only thing that I could key in on, but it made sense. They were trying to do something about improving the sales department. From the look that Roland had given her earlier, it was clear that he did not approve at what Bonnie had asked. The room was stirring a bit. Buck was dozing in the back. Dr. Elby had placed a cassette in the VCR player. He turned and said, "There are many ways of creating organizational conformity." Everyone shrugged their shoulders and looked around the room. Many heads were shaking. Buck stirred. He said sleepily, "Say what? Come on, Dr. Elby. What the hell are you talking about?" "Okay, Buck," Dr. Elby went on, "let's watch the tape and see if you would agree with this approach to team building." This is, of course, just one way to build a team. It may be similar to what Andrew experienced in his previous job. You form your own opinions. As I said, it may not be the right way, but it sure is effective. As Dr. Elby started the tape, we saw a scene from the movie The Untouchables with Robert De Niro playing Al Capone. The men had just finished dinner and were sitting around a large banquet table. Al Capone was lecturing the organization on team playing. He was talking about what it meant to be on his team. He said secrets were secrets. No one out of the circle of associates at this table was to be informed of any team-related activities. Al was holding a baseball bat and proceeded to give a negative demonstration of what happens to players who violated the sacred rules of his team. He hit one of his players with the bat several times over his head. As the tape ended, Dr. Elby asked, "Would any of you want to play on that team? Certainly, that's one way to assure you have team players. It is a ruthless and vicious way of dealing with people." I showed that because some American managers do pretty much the same thing to people who play on their teams. They have no idea how to create a team, but they sure know how to intimidate people. He stopped and asked, "Does intimidation have anything to do with teams? What makes for an effective team? How does it get formed? Who should organize a team? How are teams organized? Who is on a work team? How do smaller teams interact with larger teams? What happens if someone doesn't want to be on a team?" One of the engineers had been taking notes during the whole class. He hadn't said anything at all up to this point. Suddenly, out of nowhere, he blurted out, "Slow down, Dr. Elby. I can't keep up with you." Dr. Elby apologized and asked his name. He said, "Charles Schwensker, sir." He was almost military in his response, but it's clear that he had been in some military organization. He was very stiff and never talked with anyone in the company. Dr. Elby called on Gus, who said, "My guys have been talking a lot about this team stuff. We all think that the tool and die guys are sort of a team already, and that we shouldn't have to belong or participate with all the other teams." Others in the class started to protest. Dr. Elby raised his hand and for silence. "I'll handle this." He walked around behind the desk at the front of the room and bent down. When he stood up, he was holding a Louisville Slugger. It was just like the one Al Capone was holding in the movie. As Dr. Elby began swinging a bat, he looked straight at Gus and said, "We have ways of encouraging teamwork." Everyone laughed. Dr. Elby put the bat down and said, "Okay, hold it. This is not a joke. For a moment, let's just accept Gus's idea that they are a team unto themselves. Let's see how that would work. On the face of it, it appears that we have at least one more communications requirement. This is an additional opportunity for error. It also slows down setup and puts too many people in positions of control. Who has any ideas on how well this would work?" I asked what he meant by too many people in positions of control, and Dr. Elby explained that in every situation, someone has to make the final decision of how something will work, is scheduled, and how it gets done. He went on to say that if Gus's team was autonomous, no matter what the other team said, Gus's team would schedule their own work as they saw fit. Dr. Elby said, "A point of control occurs when there exists any person or group that can start or stop production and scheduling. It isn't very complicated. If I am the one who could start all classes, I am the point of control. If you could start a job in your area and Gus could do the same thing, unless you have phenomenal communications between you, you get a problem called multiple points of control. It is called that because more than one person can control a single job. Do you see that?" Boy, it was clear to me. That afternoon in the shop, we got a real lesson on multiple points of control. After class, Billy put me on milling parts for the control bodies. I was almost finished with the setup when Jim and Billy came over to my machine. Jim said, "I need you to do another job. It's a rush order, so start setting up for it." He showed me a blue copy of a work order, and Billy had a list for the setup. Billy told me to get Gus and start setting up so that when the parts came back from the plater, we'd be ready. I went to find Gus to get the setup going. I told Gus what we needed to do and that it was a rush. He immediately stopped what he was doing and went to the tools and jigs for the setup. I went back to my machine and started tearing down the previous job. That's the end of part 3 of chapter 9 of The War on Waste Paradox. See you in part 4. I'm sure you'll enjoy it. It gets a little sticky, but it sure is lots of fun. Look forward to seeing you in part 4. Thank you very much.